This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the National Signing Day preview version of the Unconquered Podcast. This is Jason Staples, your host, talking Florida State recruiting, coming into National Signing Day. National Signing Day this year going to be more interesting, perhaps, for Florida State fans than it has been in recent years. But that said, National Signing Day always is interesting. There's always something that happens that catches everybody, even the people who have been keeping up with this and covering this for months, off guard. So we're going to look at a few things. We're going to look at where Florida State stands, and then we're going to play a little bit of a game, looking at some possible scenarios that could be a little bit surprising. See what might happen for Florida State. I think there are some probabilities here, but then there are some things that could catch everybody a little bit off guard. So we'll take a look at all of that. Let's go ahead and get started, though. So first things first, Florida State got a huge commit. And I mean that both metaphorically and in terms of his importance to this class. A big wide receiver, Keith Gavin, the number one wide receiver on Florida State's board from the beginning. They committed in this class. They felt like they didn't need numbers at wide receiver, but they only wanted to get a kid that would be an upgrade over the talent that they currently had on the roster, somebody who could walk in and challenge for a spot right away. I mean, they've got numbers at that position, but you generally want to make sure you bring at least one in at every position each year. And they wanted to target guys that they thought were among the very best at the position in the country this year, and they felt the two best in the state of Florida were Keith Gavin and Nate Craig Myers. So they focused their attention on those two guys all year, and really Gavin was the guy that they focused the most on, especially given that he was from Wakulla, right down the road from Tallahassee, in the shadow of Doak Campbell, as you might say. Gavin, we've talked about on this podcast, I agree with Lawrence Dossie and the Florida State staff that he may be the best wide receiver in the state of Florida and is certainly one of the best prospects in the country. I think he reminds me a lot of Mike Williams, the big wide receiver from Clemson, who was actually hurt this year in that first game by Clemson with his neck injury, that freak situation where he caught a post pattern and actually ran into the goalpost and fractured his neck. But he is a tremendous downfield threat. Gavin is a guy, he's a bit of a galloper, as they say. He long strides and isn't a guy that is going to go from 0 to 60 right away. But that long vertical speed is definitely there. And for a kid that's already 220 pounds, That's a big deal. I mean, this is a guy that Fisher's offense has always done extremely well with big wide receivers on the outside, going all the way back to LSU and before that, Dwayne Bowe and those guys. He likes to have those big wide receivers on the outside. I mean, they make a difference in blocking, and a kid like Gavin, the other thing is he's 6'3", maybe a little bit taller than that. But the other thing about him, in addition to the weight, is he's really long, and that's part of why he's a galloper. He's long-limbed. And the ability to, with his catch radius, to get to balls up and over his head, that sort of thing. He's a very good jump ball receiver. Florida State really out and Tate's the best jump ball receiver on the roster right now. Gavin might be the best jump ball receiver on the roster from day one. He's not a kid that I necessarily expect to have a huge impact in 2016. It's really hard to do that as a freshman wide receiver, unless you're, say, 20, 21 years old, like Calvin Ridley, or if you're just a freak, an extremely, extremely smart player going into just the right situation, like a Sammy Watkins. Those guys are pretty rare, but periodically you do get guys that can fit roles here and there. And Gavin is a guy that could potentially get some significant reps in 2016. I think, you know, maybe 2017 is the year where I would expect him to break out pretty well and be a really significant player in that offense. The other thing is that a guy with his length and size is really difficult to jam off the line of scrimmage, and he's a physical player. This is a really, really big get for Florida State. Now, the thing is that puts Florida State came right now has 71 total scholarship players on the roster, including the 7 early enrollees. And then Keith Gavin is the 14th commit in the class. So that puts them at the 85 limit for that they need to be at on the first day of camp in the summer. So that's where, for the first time in a while, Florida State's going to have some attrition to get their numbers, because they are going to add more on National Signing Day. So they're at 85 now. And as of right now, it looks very likely that they're going to sign 4 more players, at least. 4 guys that they basically sit in the driver's seat on coming into National Signing Day. That's Jawan Williams, 4-star offensive tackle. Then Landon Dickerson, who's a consensus 4-star. He's 5-star in a couple services. Offensive tackle, offensive guard. I think he plays guard at Florida State, but he's a very versatile offensive lineman. Similar in some respects in his versatility to a guy like Derek Kelly, who played right tackle this year, probably a little bit more suited to guard, but can play across the offensive line and gives you a lot of flexibility there. But he's a better prospect than Kelly was coming out. And he is a nasty kid, exactly what you want up front. So Williams and Dickerson round out the best on paper Florida State offensive line class since maybe the 98 class, going back a long way, the best on paper class since Jimbo Fisher's been at Florida State. And then Brian Burns, a 4-star defensive end, a kid that has a lot of length, fits really well at that buck kind of position for Florida State. I think he's a little bit, he's about 220 pounds. He measured in at 6'4 and change and 220 pounds when he stopped in on his official visit the last weekend. I think he's maybe a little bit light in the butt to contribute right away. I don't think he's a guy that in 2016 is necessarily going to be a major contributor, but he does bring a natural pass rush to the table, and he's a guy that in a year or two could really be a terror off that edge, and they really like his length and his ability to bend the edge. So again, a really, really big need prospect, particularly going into 2017, to get a quality edge prospect, and he really is that. I think in many ways he may end up filling more of a Jacob Pugh role than, say, a Josh Sweat role, but we'll see exactly where he winds up in terms of weight. And then the final guy of the 4 that Florida State feels like they're really in the driver's seat for here is Carlos Becker, who's a cornerback who really came on his senior film, bumped him up, and his performance in the Under Armour All-Star practices in game bumped him up as people recognize that he was a better player than I think people thought going into his senior year. He's a guy that Charles Kelly and the defensive staff love. They absolutely love the kid. They think he can be a very good boundary corner, and they also think he can play basically any position in the secondary. One of those high versatility guys, because he's 6'2 plus, 185 pounds, can carry just a little bit more weight, and runs 10.8 in the 100 meters. I mean, a very, very, very good prospect, great athlete, fits Florida State's scheme really well. The question is, you know, he's been torn a little bit by his last visit to Ohio State, where Urban Meyer and Greg Schiano gave him a lot to think about. And, you know, that's not a done deal that he's going to be at Florida State. I think he's most likely in the class, though, so I'll add him as the 4th there. That puts Florida State at 89. So there's going to, like I said, there's going to have to be attrition. That's there's some obvious attrition to expect. I mean, they're 2 fifth-year seniors who at this point are buried on the depth chart and don't look like they're going to be able to really get on the field at this point in Chris Casher and Justin Shanks. But and Florida State, you know, they guarantee 4 years, but they don't guarantee 5. So I expect to see those guys move on after the spring. You know, Casher's kind of been a clown over the course of his time at Florida State. He's not really held up his end of the bargain, particularly for a five-star recruit. Listen, that's not to say he hasn't made plays. He's made some really key plays, particularly in that 2014 Clemson game. You know, he's made plays that ultimately earned his scholarship, but he's also off the field been a little bit difficult, and there's some reasons other than just the football reasons to have them move on. And if they're going to play a whole lot as in their senior year, if they want to be on the field somewhere, then that means they're going to probably need to do it somewhere else. So I expect to see both of those guys move on. And that would bring Florida State back down to 87. Which would mean two transfers or medical disqualifications before the fall, which is pretty easy. But then you have these other situations. There are several other possibilities, and this is where National Signing Day gets pretty interesting. Take a quick break. We'll cover that in just a moment. Now we get to the potential surprises on National Signing Day, and this is where Signing Day gets a little bit more interesting, and this is where Signing Day could get pretty fun for Florida State fans, or it could just be a little bit surprising here and there, but there are several other possibilities on the board. There are five more prospects who, in addition to the four we covered in the first segment, Williams, Dickerson, Burns, and Becker, who at this point I think we can kind of tentatively pencil into the class. I think at least the first three are in the class. Becker is more than likely in the class. That's four. That puts Florida State at 89. And again, with departures from Casher and Shanks for their fifth year, that means two more transfers or medical disqualifications would be needed before the fall. That's pretty normal attrition. Then you have five other prospects who could want in the class. Starting with Dontavius Jackson, who the staff believes is going to be a Florida State commit. They believe he's going to sign with Florida State. One of the top inside linebacker prospects in the country gives this team the thumper that they've really wanted for a while on that interior kid. They've not a player they've not had for a while in that regard. The guy that Delvin Purifoy was supposed to be when he showed up on campus. Actually, if you look at Jackson's tape and then you go back and you look at Purifoy's tape, his high school film, if you look at those two in parallel, they look very, very similar coming out of high school. It's just that Purifoy had a devastating lower leg injury comparable to what Jacoby McDaniel had. And it took McDaniel 2 years to recover from that. And Purifoy is now 2 years removed from that, or just about, not quite, around 2 years removed from that. And it's not clear that he's ever going to contribute at Florida State. So, you know, either, and even if he was, you still need to have that kind of thumper on your, on campus in terms of a few classes behind him, and Jackson is the best option for that. They really want him in this class, fills a nice need for Florida State in that big linebacker role, and a kid that runs well at that size. Kid that's about 240 pounds and runs and can actually do some of the things that they want from their inside linebackers in terms of pattern matching and all that. Kid from Texas, though, and Texas really wants him. They brought him in for an unofficial visit, a two-day unofficial visit on the last visit weekend. Texas has made their run. Florida State believes that they're going to get him. I know as of last week, basically the best Texas insiders thought that the kid was going to wind up at Florida State, but you just never know with these out-of-state guys. So I'm putting him as more of a coin flip and a kid that could be a nice add-on to the class. That would put FSU at 90. Which, again, now you need three more in addition to Casher and Shanks to move on. That shouldn't be a problem. But now, let's say Jackson's in the class. Let's say you have five. There's still four other guys who could want in the class that Florida State's not going to turn away. They're not going to turn away any of the following four. Shavar Manuel, who Florida State got on campus for that final official visit. Kid grew up a Florida State fan. His uncle and father figure, Florida State guy, finally kind of got him on campus and talked to him about where he fit in things, had some long conversations with Jimbo Fisher, long meetings, was there with Brian Burns and Jonathan Kongbo, the Florida State played this just right, putting those three together, basically marketing you guys, you know, can be this level of defensive line at Florida State and play for championships. Really gave Manuel a lot to think about. And Florida State believes they're going to flip Shavar Manuel. Now, and his interviews have been a bit coy since, you know, saying things both on, you know, to Jamie Newberg on Knowles 247 and those covering Florida on both 247 and scout.com, saying stuff like, I'm solid to Florida as of right now at this moment. That is kind of a contradiction, but you know, these are recruiting interviews. You can parse these any which way. I don't know that you can, you know, I don't think you can pencil this kid in the class, but it's very possible, given how things went on Sunday, that that kid flips into the Florida State class, which would be, from the Florida State perspective, doubly good, because not only are you getting a high-ceiling prospect, now he's a prospect that his senior year was a bit disappointing, and there's some concerns about his motor and whether he really wants to be great, but his potential, his ceiling is way up there. You're talking about a guy with rare bend and movement for a kid his size. You're landing that kind of kid and then taking that kind of kid from a Florida class that has really been sort of petering out, losing steam going into signing day. You're taking maybe their best defensive recruit out of their class. Antonius Clayton would have something to say about that. And, you know, maybe they land one other guy that's in that range. And, you know, you could argue for a couple others, but one of their best defensive recruits, you flip him from Florida. So you help yourself and you hurt Florida even more than you help yourself. So that's an interesting one. They're certainly not going to turn him down. That, you know, could put them at 91. Then you've got Jonathan Kongbo. Nobody knows what's going to happen with him. You know, I think maybe Tennessee is most likely, maybe USC is most likely, who knows? But he's a guy that could want in the class. Very, very high-level defensive end prospect coming out of JUCO with 3 years to play. Then you have Trayvon Mullen, maybe the second or third best corner prospect in the country, certainly a top five guy, 6'2 guy with rare fluidity. Nobody knows what's going to happen with Trayvon Mullen. Several staffs feel very good about him. Clemson, LSU, and Florida State all think they're going to get the kid. Although Florida State, I think, has contingencied enough that they don't necessarily need to get him in order for this class to be great. Thank you to Carlos Becker, if they're able to land Becker. But they want him. And, you know, they feel like they could potentially get him. But LSU has thought that he was theirs for a long time, and then Clemson gave him a lot to think about because he's a kid that's concerned about playing time. And Clemson probably has the most to offer in that regard for a kid right away. So, you know, I think probably most likely, I'm just guessing here on him, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he wound up at Clemson. Now, his coach has been basically trying to push him to LSU. His mom would prefer him at Florida State. It's very possible in these situations that the kid takes the path of least resistance and goes where neither is pushing. So who knows? Again, that's another that could wind up in Florida State's class that they're not turning down. Would be a signing day surprise. Don't expect it, but, you know, again, that's the sort of thing that happens on national signing days. And then you have Stephon Taylor, a defensive tackle prospect from New Orleans, from the Bayou. Bet on Texas here, but Florida State's given him a lot to think about, and Texas bringing in a couple additional defensive tackle prospects late in the process here could very, very well mean that the kid winds up wanting in at Florida State. And again, he's a kid they're not turning away. So that's five kids who you may get. You know, I think it wouldn't be surprising to see Florida State get two of them. It'd be surprising to see Florida State get three of them. It'd be staggering to see them get four of them, and they're not getting all five. So maybe, you know, I think expecting one of those five and, you know, hoping for two of those five is realistic in terms of National Signing Day. So that would put Florida State at 90, 91. If they got two, that's 91 players. Now, in addition to Casher and Shanks, you're going to need four kids to either transfer a medical DQ before the fall. That's where processing starts to happen a little bit. And FSU doesn't generally do that, but there are a few kids who may want to move on after the spring. So, you know, that's getting a little bit trickier. And if Florida State, let's say, signs three of those five, let's say Trayvon Mullen wants in and surprises everybody in that regard and decides to want it, or maybe Stephon Taylor wants it, somebody that's a bit surprising, that's where you start to see some things potentially change in FSU's class overall. At a certain point, if three of those guys want in, it's not clear that Clifford Chapman, who the coaching staff really likes, they don't want him to move on. But if they're going to get one, you know, enough of those five that they're starting to run short on numbers in terms of what they're expecting, then Clifford Chapman could end up at Texas A&M. If you get, you know, suddenly four of those guys want in, then Emmett Rice, who, again, they love, and for good reason, he's going to be a good linebacker at this level, and really, really does a lot of what they want in terms of being able to cover and be a physical sort of hybrid linebacker, similar to a Telvin Smith with some length. They love him, but if you're going to get four of those guys, there may not be room for him in this class. He may wind up at a place like Louisville. Gabe Neighbors, the H-back fullback prospect from Valdosta, they really like him, and for good reason. He's going to be a very good player. At some point, if they you know, land enough, say, yeah, well, you know, he's prepared. You know, he may wind up having to take a gray shirt. Unlikely, but it's possible. And then, of course, you have the things that could go sideways either way. Emmett Rice could look at the numbers right now and decide, you know what, I've decided I just want to go elsewhere. Clifford Chapman could do that on his own as well. Those are the guys most likely not to wind up in Florida State's class, other than the other one that could be a signing day sort of flip in the other direction, and that's Jamel Cook, who USC gave him a lot to think about, particularly, you know, potentially taking his friend Pi Young, you know, his teammate from down there. Florida State does not have room for Young, who's more of a slot receiver prospect, and Florida State's pretty full in that spot, and didn't feel like Young was enough of a difference maker to give up one of the precious spots in this class for him. And, you know, Cook wants to play with his buddy if possible. You know, really would have preferred Florida State to take him, but Florida State wasn't going to take him just to get Cook. And went out to USC. USC may be making room for Pi Young. There was some discussion with Cook of, you know, where he fit at USC, gave him a lot to think about. As of right now, expect him to be in Florida State's class. But is it conceivable that Cook could wind up going elsewhere? It is. He's a kid from South Florida, so you just never know. Looking at the rest of the list, I mean, theoretically, Amir Rasul could decide to move on to UNC. I don't think that's going to happen. Unlikely. But these are the sorts of things in terms of National Signing Day going a little bit sideways, getting a little bit of a surprise here and there. Those are the potential surprises. But what it does look like is that Florida State's going to be at 90, 91, probably going to sign the guys that they have. You know, Chapman is probably the most on the fence in terms of where he's going to go, whether he's going to wind up at Florida State or Texas A&M. If he flips out of the class, that's a possibility. But aside from that, I think the rest of the class sticks. And then Florida State adds one or two from that list of five of Dontavius Jackson, Shavar Manuel, Jonathan Kongbo, Trayvon Mullen, and Stephon Taylor. I think they land one or two of those guys. But, you know, they could land three. Who knows? That's why National Signing Day is fun. And, you know, the thing about that list of five is all five of those guys are really potential difference makers. And all at positions that really matter for Florida State. Now, Jackson at linebacker, the linebacker position, Florida State's in pretty good shape now, numbers-wise, given who they're bringing in this class at that position. Now, he adds an additional component because of his size at that position, and he's more of an early help. I mean, he could play a little bit more as of 2017. You know, you see him on the field quite a bit. But, you know, linebackers maybe a little bit lower priority than cornerback and defensive line. Defensive line, you got to have more linemen now with potential 15-game seasons. You've got to have guys to take reps. You've got to have guys you can rotate. You've got to have guys to stay fresh. Got to have guys to plan for potential injury. It's a numbers game up front at this point. And if you can have difference makers or potential difference makers out of that, you take every one you can get. And that's where Manuel Kongbo and Taylor come in. And then, you know, if you're talking about building an elite defense, you build an elite defense with defensive line and corners. That's where you're, that, you know, corners particularly who can wind up sliding over to safety or sliding inside to do different things. You got to have corners and defensive line to have an elite defense. You can kind of get by with decent to good linebackers, but you got to have a quality defensive line and excellent corners. So those guys are difference makers. And Florida State, like I said, is not turning any of those guys away. They've still been pushing hard on all five of them. And they will make room for whoever they can get out of that group. Like I said, should be a very fun National Signing Day, one of the more eventful for Florida State fans in recent memory. Fisher's classes of late have been pretty much in the bag by National Signing Day with a few prospects that you know they could potentially flip, or guys that they're up, you know, they're 50-50 or maybe 40% chances for, you know, but they've not done all that well with them. You think about Malik McDowell, you think about Beckner Jr., some of these guys that Florida State's been sort of left standing at the altar on National Signing Day with a lot of those kids of late, that isn't the position they're in with the four that they sit in the driver's seat with. This should be a little bit different in that regard. They're going to be adding some really quality players to what's already a very good class, but this is going to be one of the best classes in the country. I think Alabama's almost certainly going to finish number one, LSU probably number two when you're looking at the services overall. But remember, in that regard, recruiting rankings, on the one hand, don't matter. Don't pay attention to whether Florida State's first, second, third, fourth, whatever. Those rankings don't matter. What matter are tiers. You need to be in the top tier of recruiting, or you're not going to win national titles. You've got to have top five classes, or you're not going to win national titles. But the difference between, say, the number five class and the number one class is not very big. The difference between the number three class, if Florida State winds up where I think they will, probably number three, and the number one class, number two class, not going to be very big. Not a material difference really there. So you're in that tier. That's what matters. And Florida State's going to have that tier of class. And when you can do that with a line-heavy class with two kicking specialists in that class and an H-back prospect, then you've done really well. If you've got line-heavy classes that are finishing in the top five, you're in position to compete for national titles. And once you're there, once you're in that top tier, at that point, it's not about whether you're ranked one, two, or three. It's about evaluation. It's about fit to system. It's about luck. What guys get hurt? You know, do you have a really good prospect like a Purifoy go down with an awful injury that costs you at that position for the next couple of years? That happens. And then, of course, player development. Coaching matters. But if you're in the top three, top four, you're in position, particularly if you're doing it with linebacker or with offensive linemen, defensive linemen, heavy classes, you're in position to win titles. Titles are won on the line of scrimmage and at the quarterback position. You got to have quality quarterback play, whether it's a game manager, still got to be quality, or a stud like a Jameis Winston. You got to have quality quarterback play and excellent line play if you're going to win championships. You can sort of slide by in a lot of the other spots, but that's what matters. This class, we're going to talk about a little bit more once it's actually signed. This class already has an excellent quarterback prospect in Malik Henry, and looks like it's going to be one of the best line of scrimmage classes in the country. I would say it might wind up one of the two or three best line of scrimmage classes in the country. And you add that to a quality quarterback, a difference maker at wide receiver, one of the best defensive back prospect, or one of the best defensive back classes in the country, and you're well positioned, particularly when you put that together with last year's class with guys like Derwin James and Josh Sweat and McFadden and some of these others. This is a pretty good 2-year haul, and we'll talk a little bit more about that next podcast. One last thing to sign off with. This is National Signing Day rule number one for elite programs. National Signing Day is not about helping this year. It's about the 2 years after this year. So for the 2016 class, the 2016 class is not about really helping 2016. It's about 2017 and 2018. You're not expecting these guys to come in and contribute right away and to start right away. Guys like Dontavius Jackson and the linebacker prospects in this class, don't expect them to start. Don't expect them to be huge contributors. Expect them to be huge contributors in 2017 and 2018. That's what this is about. Few exceptions in every class, but as a rule, that's what you're looking at. In this class, by the way, some exceptions. We'll talk about that in a little bit more after National Signing Day. Levante Taylor, one of them because of his return ability, and then both of the kicking specialists, obviously, because they're going to be pushed into duty right away. So special teams is generally where you're going to get the most help from true freshmen. Going to be true in this class as well. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Unconquered Podcast. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples, and of course, Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. Make sure to catch a little bit more of my coverage. I'm going to have some analysis up on Noel Digest after National Signing Day, looking at some of the prospects in this class. We'll do a little bit more, actually, we'll do a lot more on this podcast, talking about what Florida State has landed and where it fits in terms of the Florida State roster. Make sure to catch our next podcast, which will cover the National Signing Day Hall. I'm Jason Staples, and this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of East Porto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.